The Legal Lowdown on Kerry Today.
Yeah, Mary McGillicuddy, I should say, lecturer in law in the MTU and also solicitor in Tralee's with us for the Legal Lowdown. Mary, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us again this month.
Good morning, Jerry, and good morning, listeners, on this beautiful morning.
Now, we've a couple of queries left over from last time, and a few more that have come into us in the meantime as well, Miriam. First one is, must a solicitor by law inform his client, his or her client, what charges they will incur?
Under the legislation, it provides that a notice must be given of what the fees or the basis of the charging in advance. Sometimes solicitors do it by a per hour basis, and they might explain what's going to be involved in the case and the likely prospective costs involved to the person before they embark on it, whether it be going to court, transferring a property, a will, or even a consultation. They would give advance notice of the fees.
Okay, so that's effectively the answer to that one. They're required and they have to do it. Another listener gets in touch. I suppose this is the one we had talked about in further clarification from Revenue on one. This is, please ask Miriam, if a grandparent passes away and leaves the house to a grandchild, are there taxes on this if the children of the grandparents have passed away, so the grandchild is now the next closest relation, shall we say?
That's right, and we discussed that last month, and Revenue did get back to clarify quite definitely that it only applies to under 18 grandchildren at the time of the death of the child.
Okay.
So it's one that's of concern to a lot of people, because I suppose most standard wills would have a clause in it that if one of the children died before the donors, the people making the will, that their children would inherit. But if that child dies later in life, the likelihood is those children would be a lot older. Now, if there's a few children, hopefully there wouldn't be tax implications. But if it's one child, one grandchild, it could have an impact.
Yeah, it certainly could, that's for sure. Okay, and that's a good one to have clarity on for people in that situation. Miriam, I was victim to a HSE or the HSE cyber attack recently. Am I entitled to compensation? Many of my personal details were taken.
I suppose
more and more people are getting caught up with, as there are different attacks and thefts of personal data in different companies, Miriam.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite upsetting for people to think that their personal details might be out there floating around on the dark web. But I suppose in relation to the HSE cyber attack, they did all the right things in line with what was required under data protection law, and one can complain to the Data Protection Commissioner in relation to it. But in terms of a compensation claim, usually one has to show loss of some description. And if one is careful about one's, responding, making sure not to respond to phishing attacks and other items, I suppose one is more on the alert if one realises one's personal details have been taken to some kind of a scam coming into one's email or phone or whatever. But certainly, I know most people would have experienced some forms of scamming attack, and it seems that a lot of people's personal details are out there, whether from the HSE or some other source. So I suppose in simple terms, if one can show loss, there may be a possibility of taking a compensation claim. But if one can show direct loss, there may be difficulties with actually getting compensation, because you might spend a lot of money taking the case, but maybe only get nominal damages at the end of the day. But it's certainly something, if the person is concerned about it, to get independent legal advice, basically,
yeah,
and to have a chat with their solicitor.
And there's a wider question again, as this is a relatively new area for a lot of organisations, about, you know, the Data Protection Commissioner issuing fines for breaches.
That's
and people's
right.
own entitlement to some level of compensation from companies that allowed their information to be taken.
Yeah, maybe negligently.
And if it is negligently.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly could sue for the fact of the breach of their data. But I suppose a lot of the privacy awards or breach privacy awards have been quite low. But it's certainly something, I mean, the HSE may set up some kind of a small redress scheme, and it's certainly worth writing to the HSE to explain one's distress and see if they will provide some compensation in the circumstances.
Yeah, that's a fair point in relation to that. Certainly more information should be sought by people and as you said, independent legal advice as well. Another query in here. Miriam, is there anything you can do with antisocial behaviour problems in your neighbourhood?
Yeah, I mean, this is a very difficult one, particularly where people are suffering, where, you know, you might be in a housing estate in the middle of town where there's a lot of antisocial behaviour going on in the area, and can be difficult enough to attack. But I suppose the important thing is to keep a diary and note of the incidents, and also to report them to the Gardaí as soon as possible, because if there's extreme antisocial behaviour, the Gardaí can issue a behaviour warning, and also if it's persistent, they can go for the antisocial behaviour order against the person down the road. So I suppose it's, first of all, identifying who the perpetrators are and being sure one can identify them, and then to have a kind of a diary of the behaviour, the one experienced, time, date, when it happened, what occurred, what impact it had on you, and to report to the Gardaí. Now, the Gardaí can take, if they take a behaviour warning, it must be done within a month of the incident. So that's why people need to report it quite quickly.
Yeah, don't let it lie, and don't let it slide, and take notes and then not come back to it. This query can kind of depend on the type of antisocial behaviour as well. You could have a situation whereby it's road offences, it could be, you know, by racers late at night, or it could be a situation whereby you have people fighting, or you could have just neighbours listening to loud music.
Exactly.
And that then may become an issue, depending if it's local authority or not, the council might be getting involved in.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It could be, as you say, a huge gamut of behaviour. And by the way, Gerry, there's a difference in treatment whether the person is under 18 or over 18.
Right.
There's a separate procedure for it, but it's the Gardaí one approaches in relation to it. But any of that puts people in fear or harasses them or is having an impact on the quiet of their and the peace and quiet of their neighbourhood, that's something that, you know, you need to report, because there's no, I mean, it can have a very adverse effect on people's mental health down the line. And it's been shown that, for example, noise pollution has a dramatic impact on people's health. So it is important to go after it and report it as soon as possible. Adopt a zero tolerance approach to make sure there's not an ongoing issue.
Yeah, okay. Miriam, another query here. My son has horses grazing on my land. If they break out and cause damage to a car, who's liable? Me or, I suppose, my son, the owner of the horses?
I suppose it's a question of who owns the horses, but they're on his land. Is that what you said, Gerry?
Yes,
there?
Yeah.
They're on his land. So really, I suppose the buck stops with the person who's control of the situation. And it could be that the owner of the land as controller could be liable there. I mean, somebody suing would probably sue both the owner of the horses and the owner of the land and leave it up to a court maybe to decide who's responsible. But at the end of the day, it shows the importance of, if people are putting animals in your land, the importance of having a lease for clarification of who's insuring the horses and who's liable if they cause injury. Because ideally, the son would have a formal agreement with the dad and confirm that he'll insure for liability in relation to the horses.
Yeah, but if that doesn't happen, you could be open as the landowner and the person who owns the fence that gets broken out of, that you could be liable.
You could be liable, yeah, definitely. Like, people are liable in relation to their animals now, in relation to escape of animals. It wasn't always the case. Years ago, you'll remember that you could have animals walking around the road 50 years ago, but now there's liability on the landowner in relation to escape of animals, and that's why I suppose a lot of leases talk about stock-proof fencing and everything and the importance of that.
Yeah, back to our query in relation to grandchildren and their inheritance rights with regards to it. The listener gets in touch. Another listener says, if a grandchild has lived with their grandparents all their lives and then they inherit the home, will they have to pay inheritance tax?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully not, in the sense that there's an exemption in relation to the home in which you reside, as long as you don't have any other house or property. And if it's your only home, there would be a CAT exemption or relief in relation to succeeding to that house. So say the house worth 200,000, normally a grandchild has a tax threshold of 32,500, so they'd be paying a large amount in tax there, a third of 160, say, nearly. But otherwise, with the exemption, they don't pay any tax, any capital acquisition tax or inheritance tax, gift or inheritance tax.
They lived there all their lives, no question about how long they've lived there.
Oh, yes, there is. Yeah, there have to be living with the grandparents at least three years, and they have to hold on to the house for at least 6 years. Otherwise, there'd be a clawback.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Miriam, listen, we'll leave it there. My thanks to you for talking to us in the programme. It's Miriam McGillicuddy with the Legal Lowdown.